Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day to you all. To honor Dr. King today, we are revisiting some conversations we've had around race and civil rights. And now we'll hear about the legendary photographer Gordon Parks. As the first African-American photographer at Life magazine, Gordon Parks found himself shooting everywhere, whether it was embedding himself in the daily life of Harlem gangs, letting Malcolm X fall asleep on his shoulder on a plane, or photographing and befriending Gloria Vanderbilt. The photos Gordon Parks took throughout his career are timeless, a window into a world that may look like a different time, yet clearly is not as far away as we think. Parks aimed to capture the full story of human beings and the places in which they occupied, to use his photos as both documents and symbols. Even when dealing with subjects like poverty, crime, racism, and police brutality, you get the impression that the man behind the lens was trying to portray his subjects, many of whom were Black Americans, with a tenderness and care that was rare for the American audience in the 20th century. Gordon Parks is the subject of a newish documentary that came out in November. It's called A Choice of Weapons, inspired by Gordon Parks. Let's listen to a bit of the trailer.
Photography was a way in which I could express my own feelings. I might have turned to the gun or the knife, but by then I had chosen the camera.
Gordon Parks's photography demanded that America look at itself.
With all that Black people were confronting, it requires a great deal of temerity to say that you're going to change that with your camera.
I wanted to really pursue art, so what I've been doing is taking a page out of Gordon Parks's book. That's when I started realizing how important my imagery was to my city.
Gordon Parks showed me it's important to create this visual narrative of an institutional racism and convey that to a viewer.
I've come a long way.
I use the camera to build people up and let people feel special.
I think you guys are gonna be famous.
I owe a lot of where I'm at right now to Gordon. Gordon was that pathfinder.
You're not going to get the great photograph if you don't establish trust.
It absolutely sparks an interest in going places and telling stories. I wouldn't be a reporter today if it wasn't for Gordon Parks.
The Learning Tree was the first major studio film directed by an African-American.
He opened the door, and then to make a cultural phenomenon like Shaft is remarkable.
Narrative work is how you change hearts and minds.
Back when that documentary, A Choice of Weapons, inspired by Gordon Parks, was released, All of It guest host Carrie Nolan spoke about the film and about the photographer at its center with director John Maggio and Brooklyn-born photographer Jamel Shabazz, who was interviewed as part of the doc. Let's listen to that conversation.
John, Gordon Parks was born and raised in Kansas, but eventually he left home. How did that sort of middle America upbringing influence his drive to become a photographer?
His work was so intimate. You know, when I first encountered Gordon's work, even as a young person, it was different than the other life photographs. There was an intimacy, there was a narrative, and I think he had this kind of innate, almost Midwest charm that disarmed people, that were he was able to gain people's trust, and that was what was so key to his documentary style, but then he brought with it this incredible vision as an artist, as we say in the film. So I think it was some combination of this kind of Midwestern charm that disarmed people. And, you know, the proof is in the photography and the intimacy of it, I think.
Well, in the film, you also include interviews with modern photographers like Devon Allen in Baltimore and LaToya Ruby Frazier in Flint in Mississippi. And they talk about their own process of photographing today. Why did you make that choice? And how did you come to choose these particular photographers?
Well, I wanted the film to be almost a dialogue with Gordon and contemporary photographers. I was looking for photographers who were living sort of in the legacy of Gordon Parks, who are using their cameras as a weapon, not just to document their own surroundings, but to, as we say in the film, to document and symbolize what was going on around them. And so when I met Devon, it was a logical choice. You know, his life in Baltimore so mirrors not only Gordon's work, but his upbringing as well. When Devon discovered the camera, it changed his life. completely. And then Jamel's work I was always in love with, and recognized that he was bringing the same kind of ideas and intimacy to his work and the same kind of messaging. And LaToya, the same thing. I mean, her work in Flint, Michigan, I was very much aware of, and I saw so many shades of Gordon's approach. And as she says in the film, I mean, she's in conversation with Gordon as well. So I wanted to very much live in the present.
Jamel, what was the first time you heard of Gordon Parks and his photography? You know, how old were you? What were your first impressions? What struck you?
I think that the first time I actually heard about Gordon Parks was when I was stationed in Germany in the Army in 1978-79. And I was reading a book by his son, David Park, called G.I. Diary. And it's at that point that I start to learn more about Gordon, you know, in terms of on a personal level. But prior to that, I was looking at Life magazine as a young child, 8 or 9 years old. So I always saw his work and his name, but I never really knew him. But it's in that one book that made me want to investigate further on who Gordon Parks was.
You were interviewed as part of this film, and I want to play a clip of you speaking in the film and then ask you a question on the other side. This is from the film A Choice of Weapons, inspired by Gordon Parks.
I felt it was my responsibility to talk to young people about what was going on, because a lot of young men were dying at the hands of other young men, and I was very troubled behind what I was seeing. So I would place myself in different positions where young people would be at, and I would approach them. If I saw a group, I would look at the leader and say, you know, with all due respect, I'm a photographer. When I look at you, I see greatness. If you don't mind, I'd like to take a photograph of you and your crew. And then I would start posing them. And then they would create poses. And the poses gave it life. Once the film roll was completed, I would put the film in the shot. I'll come back in an hour, and I would go back to the location. I would give out prints. It let them know that they weren't invisible. As kids, we could just tear each other down. I used the camera to build people up and let people feel special. Really receptive to hearing what I was saying, because I'm speaking in real time. Since just a few hours ago, I was on Rikers Island, and I witnessed, you know, people getting stabbed and individuals that thought that they could handle and they couldn't, and they would listen. So I was trying to encourage them to be better. You know, I didn't want to see no more of these young men incarcerated.
Jamel, what did you find was inspirational in terms of the people you photographed being finally seen?
I think for me, it was just making them feel special and seeing the innocence of a lot of people which I photographed early on in my career. Because, you know, back in the days, it was very challenging times. And I just felt the need to just reach as many young people as I could. And when I photographed them and made these really beautiful portraits, I saw another side. You know, I saw not only it was what was more important to me, it was not what I saw, it's what they saw within themselves. I was able to show them a mirror of their greatness and their beauty. And that helped to pretty much transform a lot of lives. And it allowed them to know that someone saw something beautiful inside them and made them feel special. So that was what I pretty much got out of it. But again, what Gordon said that stays with me is that the subject matter is more important than the photographer. And that's something that really resonated with me. And I wanted my subjects to feel the same way, that what they are more important than what I'm doing.
Were there any techniques that or creative choices that you borrowed from Gordon Parks in order to get the photographs that you've gotten?
I think what was important that Gordon did early on was have conversations with a lot of people that he photographed before he actually photographed them. In many cases, especially when I was traveling to different schools in the city, and even during my time working on Rikers Island, you know, I would spend hours having conversations and sometimes weeks just striving to build that trust. So what I got from Gordon's practice was the trust that was built with all of the people that he photographed. That was really the cornerstone of a lot of my work. You know, that was very essential, because in most cases, I didn't know the people in which I was photographing. So I had to build that trust through endless conversations and just showing them the work that I had as well, because I always carried a portfolio with me to help them understand that my intentions were sincere.
We're talking with John Maggio and Jamel Shabazz. Jamel is a photographer. John Maggio is the director of a film, A Choice of Weapons, inspired by Gordon Parks. It's out on HBO today. John, Gordon Parks gets his break when he's awarded a fellowship with the Farm Security Administration to be a photographer. It's in this experience when he takes that famous photograph of Ella Watson. Can you talk a little bit about what this FSA program was and why his photographs of Ella Watson are so important even today?
Yeah, the FSA was a unit of the Department of Interior that was structured around documenting the work of the WPA. So they traveled the country. Dorothea Lange was one of the photographers, Ben Shawn. I mean, some of the most famous photographers in American history were working under FSA guys. And Gordon actually got an internship, a fellowship, to work under a guy named Roy Stryker, who was the head of the FSA. And what Roy taught him, Gordon was so green at that point, he didn't really understand, he didn't really have his technique down. And one of the great things that Stryker did was took his camera and said, just go out in D.C. D.C. at the time was so segregated. He wanted him to experience what was going on in the Deep South, because Gordon was coming from Chicago. And Gordon was denied entrance to a restaurant, denied entrance to a movie theater, and he couldn't even buy a suit. And so he came back to Stryker and was so angry. And Stryker said, good, take that, use that, but figure out a way to find the right composure, find the right shot that tells that story of what you're trying to get across. And he introduced him to Ella Watson, who was cleaning the floors at the FSA at night. And so Gordon got to know her. And this is where we see this burgeoning technique. He spent days and nights with her, gained her trust, and then took that famous photograph in front of the American flag that's so beautifully composed. And there we see, again, document and symbol. He's telling a story within a story. And it's from that point that I think he takes all those techniques, and his career really just takes off after that.
One of the lines Gordon Parks is most known for is how he referred to his camera as a weapon, which, you know, the title of this film refers to. Jamel, what do you think Gordon Parks meant by that? And do you use your camera as a weapon?
Definitely. What Gordon meant in terms of my interpretation is that he wanted to use the camera as a device to just fight things that really bothered him, from poverty to racism to crime. And he felt that a single image can do that. When I was reading his book earlier today, just to refresh my mind of his greatness, I remember a conversation he had with some young Black Panthers in a car, and they had their guns, and one had a 45, and he just spoke about the 35 millimeter and the power that one single image can do to just provoke thought and change one's opinion. So for me personally, you know, I use my camera as a weapon and a compass. It guides me to certain lands. And I just, like Gordon, it's certain things that troubled me. You know, when I first came home from the military, I had a lot of questions about things that I wasn't aware of, such as the war in Vietnam and poverty and racism. So I took to the streets with my camera to explore these different situations, you know, photographing Vietnam veterans and learning more about the war. And it just gave me a broader understanding in terms of poverty. You know, I was troubled behind that. Here I'm in the military, and I'm in an environment where, you know, we all appear to be equal, and I'm looking at the spending on the military budget, but yet I come back to the States, and I'm seeing people living in poverty, and I was really troubled behind that. So what I wanted to do was make images to illuminate these different issues and share them with a larger audience. Because oftentimes in my portfolio, I would have images of poverty, I would have images of racism, things that really troubled me, and I would engage young people about these events that are going on and how we have the ability to make the world a better place. So the camera was that weapon in which I tried to use at a very interesting time in my life. Of course, so many young people had guns at that time. A lot of guys I grew up with, they picked up the gun, and I was troubled behind the destruction in which it was having in my community. So not only did I pick up the camera as a weapon, but I tried to encourage other young people to put down the gun and pick up the camera and use that to, rather than fight your enemy, but to engage him and try to end the violence that was going on in the community using photography as a means.
And you go on to say that you originally became interested in photography through the photojournalism in Life magazine. Why do you think that magazine at that time was so important to American culture?
For me, it gave me a gauge into a larger world. I was young. I went to private school. And despite that, it's a lot of things that weren't being taught to me, and I was troubled behind that. You know, it was through Life magazine that I was introduced to war in Vietnam. And I'm very young looking at the pages. I remember even going to the library and stacking up just back issues of Life magazine. I was so intrigued with the publication and just the visual language of photography. And it answered so many of my questions, not only the images itself, but the stories that came with them. So for me, Life magazine is the equivalent to what social media is today, the internet. It provided me with so much of what was going on, and not just the politics, but just seeing how life was outside of my community in Brooklyn. So it was essential for me. It actually gave me life, gave me understanding and clarity. And what's so interesting about it, my parents had no knowledge of me even being involved in this publication, the manner in which I was. It was both Life magazine and Natural Geographic that really shaped me as a young man and just answered so many of my questions and just enhanced my understanding of the world around me.
When Gordon Parks joins Life magazine as the only Black photographer, what's the magazine like at that time?
Well, it was read by, I think, something like 20 million people. It was really, as Jamel pointed out, it was like the internet. I consider it more like the Instagram of the era, where people went to learn about the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was largely through white eyes. I mean, the entire, you know, there's a great photograph in the film of the entire staff of Life magazine at that time. And these were some of the most, you know, you were a rock star. If you were a Life magazine photographer, then that meant they were at the pinnacle of photojournalism. And to see Gordon there and his ability to bring a whole new lens to that magazine and to see the world and to see America through Black eyes turned the tables on a lot of things. And I think that's what made him so successful. He brought he three-dimensionalized Black life in a way that was so critical at that time. And he brought it to Middle America.
One of his most well-known pieces in Life was his story on Harlem gang leader Red Jackson. John, how did Gordon get to know Red? And why do you think these photos are so memorable?
Well, that was his first photo essay. I mean, he went into Life magazine with a portfolio of work that he'd been, you know, building after the FSA. And he sort of actually he said, you know, what if I go and do a Harlem gang member? He hadn't made that connection yet. So when the editors of Life said, great, go for it, he had to go find a character. So he went into Harlem, and it speaks volumes about his method. He just spent time there. He spent weeks there trying to meet the right people. And then when he found Red, you know, he embedded with him. He spent so much time. Those photos are so intimate. It's Red with his mother and father. And you see that, as we say in the film, Nelson George says, you know, not every gang member, you know, is a gang member, is a gang leader all day. He's got a family. He's got brothers and sisters. And so you see this complete other side of what life was like. And I think for a lot of white America at that time, it must have seemed alien to be on that side of a photo essay like that. So sort of embedded in deep inside. And I think it either affirms some stereotypes, but certainly sort of brought light to the difficulties of growing up in Harlem and the you know, harsh realities. He filmed gang fights. He filmed, there was a death. One of Red's friends died in a knife fight, but he also showed the other side. So I think it was such a sort of well-rounded look at what life was like in Harlem then that it was you couldn't look away. And it really opened the door. That solidified Gordon's work at Life and gave him a career.
Eventually, Gordon Parks got into directing. He's known as being one of the founders of the so-called blaxploitation genre in the 60s and 70s with movies like The Learning Tree and John Shaft. And why did he feel this urge to become a movie director, John?
I think he was always aware of how media was shifting. I mean, people were moving away from magazines. This was a period in the 70s. When, you know, films were, you know, just Hollywood directors were like what Life magazine photographers were by then. And so I think he wanted to express himself. He was always looking for different ways to express himself. And I think he really, you know, he got to Hollywood late, if you think about it, at that time. He was in his late 50s. And I think Shaft was just a logical, you know, he always talked about he wanted to create this character, you know, after all of the sort of hardships he'd seen. In Black life, you know, Shaft is a Black man with agency, and it's such a great vehicle for Gordon for storytelling. You know, Shaft goes about his life, says, you know, can talk to the cops the way he wants to talk to the cops. And I think it was a great ability for Gordon to express himself to an even wider audience that was now going to the movies. And unfortunately, I think there was a ceiling for Gordon in Hollywood. I mean, I think after that genre died, Hollywood, and Hollywood wasn't making any money off of it anymore. They stopped calling Gordon. And I think that was one of the great sort of, you know, regrets in his life. He wanted to make more films, but like I said, I think there was a ceiling.
Jamel, in the minute or so we have left, can you tell us why Parks films like Shaft are so beloved?
I think for many of us coming up during that time, it gave us a hero for the first time, because prior to that, we really didn't have a lot of black images on television that we could mirror. But I remember my parents going to see Shaft, and those within the elders within my community, it seems like it really impacted them and gave them a sense of pride, even to the point where it inspired a lot of young men to go into law enforcement, because now they have someone who is upright, who is dignified, and who has a great sense of integrity. You know, so it gave us our first hero, and I know that it touched me and even inspired a lot of us to get our hair cut like Shaft and kind of like take on that swag that he had. So he served as a role model for many of us coming up during a time that it was so many lacking.
Why, as a photographer, why do Gordon Parks' photographs still matter today? Why are they timeless?
Because it's a historic testimony of how life was before many of us, you know, before we picked up the camera. You know, it gives me a gauge into how life was in the 1940s. It inspires, you know, inspires my creative process and inspires a whole bunch of other young African-American photographers in particular that really didn't have the examples in front of them. So he has served as a light for so many of us.
I want to thank you both for being here today. John Maggio, the director, Jamel Shahbaz, a featured photographer in the film A Choice of Weapons, inspired by Gordon Parks. It's out on HBO today, and thank you so much for being with us here on All of It.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Great to be here.
That was a conversation with director John Maggio and Brooklyn-born photographer Jamel Shahbaz. The documentary is called A Choice of Weapons, inspired by Gordon Parks. And you can stream it now on HBO Max.